Hey, podcasters, welcome to another edition of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Tim Estradol, and joining once again from beautiful Chicago is Jill Simonello!
Hello! Thank you for having me.
Now, as a side note here, Jill did the Avon Walk for the Cure this weekend, and so if she's a little bit sluggish or tired, I think she gets a pass on that. I think it's okay.
I know, my brain is still a little bit fuzzy. As we're doing this, it's almost 11 o'clock my time, and I'm just making breakfast. So, but it's 39 miles for the Avon Breast Cancer Walk, and it was great. It was a great experience, but I tell you, I have been sleeping about 8 to 12 hours every night for the past three nights, and it's not enough.
Yeah, I'm very impressed and very proud of you for doing that walk. I don't have the same physical ability to do that same walk. I think I'd be done after a couple miles. Congrats on that. I wanted to get right in the news. We have a big item. So here's the deal. Before I get to this news, I think this is a big item. I think I've been talking to people on Twitter about it. I've been talking to other people about it. I think it's a huge item that isn't getting a whole lot of play too much from different automotive folks. The truck guys are all over. We're all over this. This is a big deal. But I don't think a lot of people want to talk about it because it's kind of a weird, it's kind of the secondary nature. All right, so what am I talking about? Oh, I should tease that with, before we get to that, this episode is brought to you by our friends at HID Extra. Haha, go to HIDextra.com to view the best in HID and LED headlight conversion kits and accessories for your truck or SUV. And while you're there, use code PPT15, PPT15 to get 15% off your lighting order today. Check out the show notes for more information. So, hey, I dragged this out long enough. I got the teaser. I got the sponsor information in there. What the heck am I talking about? I'm talking about, for the past 3 months now, Ram trucks have collectively beaten the Chevy Silverado in monthly sales. And so January, February, Chevy was on top, and March, April, May, Ram was on top. So Ram is currently 5,000 trucks behind for the number two spot in the standings, as you know, the charts we use. But they've outsold Chevy by 1,000 units last couple months. And I bring that up because there's a lot of factors involved. A lot of people look at sales charts. I mean, a lot of the guys are like, I drive Ford to the truck leaders, you know, and that's a rallying cry for them. And Ford pushes that out quite a bit. The other thing that to consider here as well is Ram is still battling with the Justice Department and with EPA over their emissions testing. And so the EcoDiesels are currently non-certified, so they can't sell them. EcoDiesel sales were making up 20% of their entire truck output. So Ram is besting Chevy down one of their top sellers. And so that's a very interesting statement. Now, we can argue about this all day long because people can go back and they say, well, we should combine Silverado and GMC sales and Colorado sales, and it's a GM truck sales versus Ram truck sales and yada yada. I think it's just important to note that the market is changing and that Ram, for a long time, has suffered criticisms by myself and others about dependability, about the dial shifter, about the height of their trucks. I mean, I think they're great looking trucks, but I've had some concerns on different pieces of that. And it's funny that to me, it's interesting to me that the marketplace is changing the fact that they're finally getting beyond, I would say, the dependability argument, and people are seeing them for what they are, a great looking truck with really great interiors and really great powertrains. And mm-hmm. It's interesting, you can always find anti-Ram articles out there. They're always out there. And we've had certainly discussions on them where Ram's going to get rid of the Hemi. They're going to go to a turbo. Well, you know, that's a Hemi engine. I don't think they're going to do that. There's people that talk about the EcoDiesel being too overpriced. Well, you know what? It's a diesel. There's a lot of people arguing different things about this. And I think that Ram built on the most stylish truck out there. Now, there's another piece of this that I want to get to. And I think it's very interesting is that for the last year, 2 years now, Chevy's been talking about 4G LTE Wi-Fi. They've been talking about innovations, team driver assist. They've been talking about truck stuff, typical truck stuff, payload, torque, things like that. Ram has always talked about payload and torque, and that's a different aspect. Marketing's a little bit different, and also Ram has one of the oldest trucks in the marketplace currently. I don't remember the specific year. I could Google it and figure it out, but the truck's been on the market for a substantial amount of time without a facelift. Chevy's done their facelift a couple years ago. They have a new one coming out. They're already doing teasers of it. Ram has been delayed in coming out because FCA seems like they keep running out of money, or the plan changes, or whatever you call it, that keeps getting pushed back. So I have Jill, and Jill's been sitting here very patiently listening to all my rigmarole on this. And what I want to know from Jill is, I want to know, do you think that consumers really care about how old a truck is in the on the marketplace, or is that really just a truck snob kind of piece of information?
I kind of think it's a truck snob piece of information. As long as the styling is modern and they do some little mini refreshes along the way, and again, this is coming from somebody who is not necessarily a full-on truck person. I deal mostly in cars. Sinclair has 6, 7 TV stations in Texas, so I've started focusing more on trucks. But I've never driven a Ram. The closest I've come, I should say, I've driven it in small, like at the Mama Rally. I've driven it in small regional events, but I've never had it for a press loan. So, like the closest and the most intimate I have become with a Ram is I actually fit in the Ram box. I can share that photo with you.
I remember that photo. Yes, I remember that photo.
But I think that what truck owners and people who maybe aren't necessarily truck snobs, they are looking for, affordability. They're looking for, and again, this is where my 39.3 mile brain kicks in. Can't find the word I'm looking for, but they're looking for how capable it is. Can it do what I need it to do, and does it look nice? And I think there are some amenity issues as well that people are looking for, leather seats, heated seats, that kind of stuff, perhaps. But when you have a truck that looks good and that's doing well, why would you change it? So it looks like the biggest change, because I'm looking at this is the fourth generation 1500. It looks like the biggest change it had was in 2009. So that is actually, I mean, that's significantly older than pretty much even most cars. I think there's usually a 5 to 7 year change, and there's usually a mid-cycle refresh. So you get about 3 years into a vehicle, and they do a complete, like not a complete, but a minor overhaul, and then they go another 3 years, and you have the new model. So that is, I mean, what? So that's 8 years, and Jill math in my 39.3 mile brain.
It's good you point that out, because I had forgotten the 0.3. So yeah, so typically
Point
it's a
three is
se
really hard.
right it's a 7 year refresh. Usually you do like the new model, powertrain changes, trim changes in 3 years. To Ram's credit, and I talked with the Ram folks today, and they want to talk about the new products. They do have some new products. They do have the Ram Rebel, which came out a couple years ago. They do have some new appearance packages for the Ram. They're always doing some cool midnight edition kind of appearance packages. So
Right.
they have done support for the truck. The Power Wagon is new. That was new last year. So they've done some support for it, but it's interesting in the half ton how much they haven't got around to it. But again, they're still selling well. It's an interesting thing. It's an interesting aspect in the marketplace that you even step back and say Nissan Frontier. I mean, that is the oldest truck in the marketplace. That thing is 2003 or something, it was designed, but it still sells well because it's a cheap truck. It's been at this price point that makes sense for consumers. So it's an interesting thing. I'll be interested to see how the year turns out. Of course, Ford's number one. They're not really getting that concerned with it. Although I would, well, they got such a lead. It's ridiculous. When it's May and you're already claiming the sales leadership for the year, you know that you have a huge lead. I don't think Ford's losing the number one spot anytime soon. I don't foresee Ram challenging. I don't for, here's all right. Here's a little bit of inside take. I don't foresee Chevy challenging Ford for number one spot. That's just not the where the brand is. I do see Ram challenging Ford for number one spot, because Ram is they're the upstarts. They're hungry, and they've had a bad reputation for a couple of years for dependability. They want to shred that and become the best selling truck they can, and I think they could really challenge Ford, because they're always going after them. Even at all the press events we go to, they're always going after them. Ram's always like instigator, and so I think they could go after him. I think it could be interesting to see how to go after him. And I would also point out too that these numbers do matter as well to companies and employees. If you go to factories, like I've done factory tours with Toyota and GM in different places, they post these numbers on the walls. They post the sales numbers on stories, and they post have flat screen TVs that show the sales numbers. And so the employees building these trucks in plants and the marketing folks are very aware of where they stand. And so it's a source of pride when you see, you know, you're up 18% like Ram was last month and your competitor's not. And people pay attention to this stuff a lot. And so I just thought it was a really interesting story. I think that there should be more play for that. I will be interested to see how the year turns out. Ram's about they're about 1,000 units ahead last month, but they're 5,000 behind year to date. So they have a shot. They have a shot of besting them, but I don't know. We'll see where we end up with that. All right. So I wanted to move on and take a break. When we come back, we're going to have a Mazda product communications guy. And I brought him on because, I don't know about you, Jill. I don't know anything about Mazda. I don't know a thing.
Mazda is like my favorite brand in the business, actually.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So what's your take on Mazda? I've driven a Miata and I was like, eh. Mm-hmm. And I drove the CX-9 and I was like, wow. Yes, I know. I'm that journalist who's like, it's a Miata. It's fine. I don't really get. Okay. All right. School me. What's going on with Mazda?
So what I like about Mazda is they're a little bit underrated and a little bit understated. I think that they're some of the most beautifully designed vehicles out there. And they have some of the best driving vehicles out there. I mean, the automaker uses the hashtag driving matters, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, they have this nice balance of solid and yet sporty, fun vehicles. So I had a few weeks ago the Mazda 3 sedan as a test vehicle. And in my mind, it was the vision of the perfect vehicle. I'm actually writing that article right now is like, what's your favorite car? It would be this one. Because it had leather seats, it had heated seats, and it had all the accoutrements and safety features that you could want, yet it came with a manual transmission. And that is really rare these days. And plus, I think it was only about, I think it maxed out at like $26,000. So it's relatively affordable. You get a lot of cool features, and you still can choose to have fun. You know, you can choose the manual transmission. And I think in all of their cars, the manual transmission is always an option. I don't think any of the SUVs have that option anymore. The CX-5 used to, but maybe the CX-3, but I don't think so. But I know all of the sedans have the option for a manual transmission. And it's funny because I'm actually either today or tomorrow, so soon, but you know, maybe by the time this podcast airs, it will already be posted. I'm actually posting an article about which would you pick, the Mazda MX-5 or the Fiat 124. So I always have Mazda on the brain because they really are. I just think that they are so underrated and they're a beautiful car and they just drive so well. And so I don't want to tell anybody because it's like the best kept secret, but then I want to tell everybody because I want people to buy their products because they're just so amazing. But there's, you know, they're a small automaker and they don't want to be big. They like kind of where they are in the business. But no, I could go on for hours about Mazda. I love Mazda.
It's so fascinating because I average like one Mazda press loan a year.
Okay.
And that's the Mazda CX-9 I got actually was by accident. I was supposed to get a Sorento and he had to pull the Sorento and give me the Mazda instead. So it's fascinating because on the flip side, I've driven every Ram truck in the past like 3 years, right? And I've had that as press loans. And so it's great to have you in the podcast because it's like you have a different perspective on it and you get different types of loans than I get. And mm-hmm. So you're able to provide stuff that I just, you know, I don't know. I remember Mazda had the Ranger badged pickup. I mean, that's what I know of Mazda. I mean, that's kind of,
you know. The B-roll, I think they called it, the Mazda B-roll. I was like, really? What? I don't know that name. But yeah, I think it was B-roll was the name of it.
Yeah. We actually see them once in a while out here. I actually drove by one the other day because they, you know, they're Ford Rangers. The parts are available. Anyways, all right. So let's get to the podcast. Let's get to the interview because we had a great conversation. Jacob Brown was his name. Great conversation, Jacob. I think I surprised him with my complete lack of knowledge with Mazda. So that was a great conversation. And I'll be back in a minute. We're going to follow up on the conversation with the Heels and Wheels and the VW Atlas, which I get to drive the Atlas tomorrow, but I'm really curious to hear what Jill says about it from her experience. So we'll be right back with more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. And we're back with more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. Today on the phone, we have Jacob Brown. He is product communications with Mazda. He is a, I'm going to call him a guru on the CX-9. I think that's a good title for him, guru. welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tim. Glad to be here.
So I'm a Mazda idiot, is I'm going to say this, because I don't know much about the brand, and I don't think many of my listeners know much about brand. I know you make a you made a Ford Ranger knockoff. I know you made a Miata, and I drove the Miata, and I thought, okay. And then I had the CX-9, and I was like, holy cow, this is pretty impressive. So what's going on with Mazda these days? Where's Mazda as a brand?
Okay, so Mazda, you did touch a little bit on the history of the company. Up until 2016, we were partially owned, about a third owned by the Ford Motor Company. Mazda is now completely and wholly independent, based in Hiroshima, Japan. And since then, we've integrated a technology suite called SkyActiv in every car that we have, from the smallest MX-5 Miata to the largest CX-9, which is literally twice the weight of the MX-5 Miata. And but regardless of that, everything is about lightweighting, about efficiency, about making cars that are more practical and powerful for real-world applications, and then just making them really pretty. If you notice, all of the cars look pretty sharp, and there's a reason for it. It's because our designers really do believe that designing a car is an art and not just something with slapping lines on a car, and they take a lot of pride in it.
Yeah, I was checking that on the CX-9. It was interesting. It's a long and wide, you know, three-row SUV. But looking at the statistics on it, it's not that much different than the Highlander, not much different than the Explorer as far as overall size. But it definitely looks more sleek. It's definitely more of a kind of a gotcha. It you don't anticipate you have that much room inside, just the way that the overall design is.
Yeah, well, it doesn't. One of the things that we say sometimes in the company is it doesn't cost any more money to make a car look good. So that's what our designers really focused on. They looked at, when they were drawing inspiration, some of the more premium SUVs from Europe. To say, well, what do these car companies do well? And then how do we make something that is wholly and uniquely Mazda and make it sleek and sporty, still make it practical? And that was really one of the big pushes for the car when they came up with the inspiration for it, was this theme of self and family. Family, obviously, because it's a 7-passenger SUV, but self because it's something that you can go on a date night in with your significant other, and you don't feel like, oh, I'm just driving the mommy mobile. It's really something that you're proud to be seen in.
Yeah, the mommy mobile is not something you take to date night. I'm totally with you there. I'm totally with you there. I read some reviews on it before I drove it, and I drove it around. I had the same impression reviews did. It's fun to drive. For a three-row SUV, the SkyActiv is just a fun engine and it's fun technology, but it's a sporty SUV.
Yeah, most definitely. Our engineers, I swear on any given day in the R&D parking lot, it looks like a used Porsche dealership. They all care about driving. Our focus for Mazda is a driving-focused company, and they really take pride in their ability to deliver that. That being said, once again, much like a family SUV need not be boring to look at, a family SUV need not be boring to drive either, and they take a lot of pride.
No, they got to be boring to drive. Come on.
Oh, come on. they really wanted to make an SUV that you didn't mind getting into, and that's part of the philosophy of what Mazda is doing now. If you enjoy looking at your car and you enjoy driving your car and you see this wood and leather and aluminum and you have this punchy turbocharged engine that's propelling you wherever you need to go, you're going to fall in love with the car. And it's, in a lot of ways, obviously mainstream SUVs are mostly a rational purchase. But in the same way, Mazda is a small company. Our focus needs to be emotional as well. We need to be able to deliver on those intangibles. And that was really a lot of what our designers and our engineers were going for. And that's why the vehicle drives the way it does, why it looks the way it does, why it feels the way it does. Heck, you had the signature model, correct?
I did.
Believe it or not, there's actually, they infused the NAP wrap of leather in that car with a smell that's supposed to last for 3 years. It's kind of this almost potpourri kind of smell. Everything was designed with a purpose on that car, even the smell of the car, for you to fall in love with it.
Yeah, so
I know that sounds kind of gooey and wishy-washy, but it's absolutely true.
Well, but that's something that's happening these days. I was thinking that some of the more luxury brands, like Rolls-Royce and different brands, big luxury brands, are doing that as well. That the car has a unique smell. They're touching on more unique senses. But let's talk about inside the car. So you touched on it. I've kind of touched on signature. This is a signature trim. This is the new trim for you. I'm looking at this list. It's Napa leather trimmed upholstery, aluminum and rosewood interior trim, Bose 12-speaker system. Advanced keyless entry system. So then you have push button start. You don't have to worry about keys. You don't have to worry about that stuff. You do have the adaptive cruise control. Do you guys have any other features you forgot to put in here? I mean, my goodness, this thing is loaded.
We're one of the few automakers that offers a windshield projected head-up display in a three-row crossover.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
The next one up that you have to go at is probably about $60,000. Ours is $45,000, which for a completely loaded SUV with wood and leather and aluminum and all the accoutrements that ours has is impressive. It's incredibly impressive. So we're super proud of it.
And that's a new trim for this year, or has it been out?
The signature. So we have three traditional trim levels in our current structure. Sport is the base level. Touring is a mid-level, Grand Touring, and then with the Miata, we have the club, which is a little bit more aggressive, a little bit sportier. But Signature is a new trim level. It was kind of an experiment with CX-9, that what can we do above the Grand Touring? And the Signature was really how we express the ultimate of that car, and that car happens to be the CX-9. And it was an experiment to see, let's move the brand up. Let's see if buyers are willing to consider a Mazda that drives exceptionally and has these really cool luxury features in it. And so far the response to it has been overwhelmingly positive, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, these luxury features these days used to be, you know, you'd go from the base level to the next grade up, and you got chrome and leather seats. I mean, that's what there was back in the day. But nowadays, you know, for you start moving up, and you're talking $5,000 to $10,000 difference from base models as you move up. But in a 5-year loan, it's not that much money. It's $100 here a month. It's kind of, you know, $100, $200 a month. But it's just so much more fun to drive. It's so much more comfortable. You have so many more features, and you have the technology that people are, you know, requesting quite a bit. Technology these days in cars, and hooking up your Bluetooth cell phone is a huge deal.
Yeah. So we do have a lot of technology. We have that full 8-inch Mazda Connect. We have, I think, almost every trim level comes with navigation standard. I believe the Sport model is the only one that doesn't. On the Signature, there's some really, really cool LED accents in the grille that don't look, you know, they look tasteful. But they really have this cool curbside look to them. And then we just have a lot of the go-tos that you know in the class. We have a predictive all-wheel drive system, which is unique to Mazda, that actually senses steering angle, temperature outside, if your windshield wipers are being used, because if your windshield wipers are being used, obviously it must be raining or it must be foggy outside, so it preloads the rear wheels to have more power sent to them in order to make sure that your drive feels more confident. A lot of people think, oh, well, you know, I know my all-wheel drive system is working when I can feel the front wheels slip and then the rear wheels grip. That's not how we do things at Mazda. We do things that we want to instill driver confidence at all levels, and the best compliment that we can get for our all-wheel drive system, for instance, is the fact you don't feel it. Going on all of this premium features and all of the equipment and everything, just by sheer fact of how the car looks and drives and feels and everything, we're seeing for the first time ever, when I looked at the consideration list for people who ultimately bought CX-9s, whereas with the old one there were a lot of mainstream brands on it, this time we're seeing Mercedes and BMW and Acura and Lexus, and it's really quite impressive to be able to see this model escalating. In fact, 60% cars that are out there right now for the 2016 and 2017 CX-9 are GTR Signature, which is to say their top trim level, 62/3 of them.
2/3 of people are buying the top trim level on the CX-9?
Yes.
Wow.
Which is way different than how the trend in that segment usually goes. Usually about 50% of people are buying the mid-level and then about 25% at the base level and 25% at the top level.
Yeah, sure. I mean, usually the base level is, you know, people want to save the money. But like I said, driving around the Signature for about a week, I really saw that all comfortable I was and all the different design accents and the seats and everything, that was really a comfortable driving SUV. And, you know, and my Monroney I have in front of me, the tag says it was, you know, it's funny because it was just chuckling. Optional equipment equals $600. You have some cargo mats, some floor mats, and a machine gray paint charge. I mean, that's it. I mean, you get it fully loaded. I mean, there's not a whole lot of optional equipment. You walk in, it's $45,000 for mine, which was a 940 dealer processing handling fee. So 44 to 45, you know, and out the door. There's no questions about adding on and changing up different features, which I like.
There are definitely some automakers that do like a la carte, and you can get deep into the woods on that. We generally try to keep it as simple as humanly possible, that you have a sport model and that has a package that you can get with it, a touring model that has a package that you can get with it, grand touring, and then the Signature, and then all-wheel drive or front-wheel drive, and it's really a pretty simple product structure, and you can clearly see the value of each trim level, and that's sometimes something that confuses customers when you have everything a la carte. It's like, well, what do I get? So our product planners have really broken it down and made it really simple.
And I think that's a smart thing to do. So make sure you check out the 2017 Mazda CX-9 dealers. I want to talk about fuel economy real quick. Make it more than that. It's a 20 city, 26 highway, 23 combined. I got close to that, although I was driving a little bit faster, so I burned a little more fuel than that. That's in the all-wheel drive setup. So make sure you check it out. Make sure you go to dealers and see it. If you haven't considered Mazda before, it's definitely something that will surprise you as you drive it. So thanks, Jacob, for being on the program today.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. I appreciate you having me on.
And finally, on today's program, we're going to talk with Jill more in depth about the Heels and Wheels event she went to. There was some very fantastic social media photos that from the event, and lots of amazing vehicles she got to drive that I was infinitely jealous about. And then we'll talk about the VW Atlas in a minute. So give us a take. What was like Heels and Wheels like?
You know, I always love this event. Christine Overstreet does an amazing job. She does this every other year, where she brings together women in the industry, both journalists, bloggers, and like PR professionals. And it's completely a women-only event. And so you get to drive cars, talk about cars, you know, and dish a little bit in a way that you wouldn't normally be able to when you're with a whole bunch of men. Because when I travel, it's usually me and like 50 other men. Yeah. And, you know, I can only talk about football and baseball for so long, which I, you know, I like baseball, but football, meh. You know, it's a great event. So the interesting thing was, I believe there were 16 vehicles there. Let me say vehicles. And of the 16 vehicles, only 4 were cars.
Yeah, I noticed that with your photos, and I think you read the list to me last week on the podcast, and I completely missed that fact. When I saw your photos, I was really shocked by that. Mm-hmm. It really speaks to the changing nature of the marketplace and how the important role SUVs have, but it was surprising.
Yeah, and you know, when we talked about that a little bit, because we all remarked on it, and you know, the answer was, this is what women are buying right now, because they need the functionality and the capability, and you know, they need the things that the SUVs offer. And so it was interesting, because one of the women there was writing an article. She wanted to know what our favorite vehicles were, or what the biggest surprise was, or you know, and then why you liked it. And everybody, as I was listening, as she was asking the question, and You know, I mean, we had an Aston Martin DB11. We had a Lexus LC500. We had the Jaguar F-Type R. And so, like, we had some really sexy cars. But a lot of the women were like, I like the Volkswagen Alltrack. I like the Volkswagen Atlas. I like, you know, this. I like that. And they were, by and large, the SUVs. I mean, the supercars are pretty and awesome and fun. But for an everyday driver, what would you live with? And, you know, I had driven the Infiniti Q30, and I haven't driven Infiniti products in a while. And I was, like, so surprised with how sporty it was, how much fun it was to drive. Yet there's still space in the back. If I wanted to put a couple bikes, you know, put down a second row seat, put a couple bikes in there, you know, I could go hit the trail with my bike. And, you know, so it has, but it's easy to park in the city. And so that's the perspective I always come from. And so, like, when she asked me what my vehicle was, I was like, well, you know, the biggest surprise for me was the Q30 because of the or QX30, sorry, not a sedan. That whole Infiniti nomenclature is like another conversation for another time, but QX30. And
newsflash, so, we don't like it.
Hashtag no, we don't. But it was, the vehicle itself was pretty cool. And for something that you would have in the city, but then could also use for hauling some stuff, it was a nice little compromise. But I mean, so overall, like it's a day long event and you get in and out of these vehicles. There's a PR person for every vehicle that they have. So you get some unlimited time with these people to ask questions and, you know, get the real scoop on stuff. And it was really nice. I got to drive several vehicles that I hadn't driven before. And it was nice to compare them back to back to back to back. And really get a sense of what each vehicle did and could offer. So it was a great event.
So what was your answer then to the question? What vehicle surprised you the most?
Or
you
liked the most? QX30. I told you, QX30.
Oh, the QX30.
Now who needs more coffee?
Actually got coffee today. I was so tired. I actually get the QX30 in 2 weeks. It's funny you bring that up. I have also not driven Infiniti products very much. Infiniti is an interesting company from, I don't know about your perspective on it, but so like Nissan Infiniti, Infiniti's a luxury brand, right? So Toyota Lexus, luxury brand, Lexus, Toyota. But from a PR standpoint, Toyota Lexus are kind of, they're all together. Infiniti and Nissan are separate companies. And
yes.
So...
Never the twain shall meet.
Right. And I know the Eastern region PR person from Infiniti really well from her work at Nissan. I know the Nissan team really well. But I don't really know the West Coast Infiniti guy very well. And so, you know, I think it's one of the things that consumers don't understand with this job is we can't just sit there and say, I want this vehicle, send it to me now. That's not how that works. It's what's in the fleets, who you know, what they think about you, and where you can go in events. That's why events like Heels and Wheels, and I'm going to an event tomorrow, it's a track day and off-road driving day. Those make a lot of sense because you get a lot of time in vehicles you don't really get to for a variety of reasons. I mean, it just happens that way. And So it's fun to get in those vehicles that you haven't seen. Or, you know, and we're like anybody. You see them at auto shows. You walk by them. You glance at them. But you don't get that real in-depth until you're spending a lot of time with them. So I'm really happy. I had a great time. It looked like a ton of fun. I had to laugh. And I'll tell the audience this story. As we know, and as you've listened to the podcast, you know that Jill is 4'11". You know that that's her height. And there was one photo that she was in a Nissan product. And one of the Nissan reps said that, the greatest thing about doing this event is making sure you sit behind Jill Simonello because there's tons of legroom. And she had like an acre and a half in front of her.
we were in the Infiniti Q60 at that point, and she was just like, wow.
there's a forward seating position in these vehicles that Jill knows very well. All right, mm-hmm. So that was a very funny photo and a good time. So make sure you check out Jill's, well, maybe when you do an article, she'll post that and we'll share it. I also want to get to the fact of VW Atlas, because we talked about this before you left. Mm-hmm. And one of your comments was when you left, you were going to talk to the women about it and get their viewpoints. What did you find out?
You know, it's kind of a mixed bag. I turned it in yesterday, and I'm still trying to decide what I think about it. And, you know, unfortunately, living in the city, you never put a ton of miles on the press vehicles. I feel like they probably think, what, did you just, like, go to the grocery and come back? And it's like, no, I went to the gym, I went to the grocery, picked my sister up at work, which is only 26 miles. But, you know, I did a lot of errands, but it's just living in the city, everything is so close.
Right.
So I got a lot of seat time, but just not a lot of miles in. But It's just, I really don't.
39.3 miles walk.
Yes. I just really think it's not made for somebody my size. And so that's why I wanted to get some other perspectives, because I sat too close. My knee hit the steering column,
right.
You know, trying to, put the seats up and down the rear seats. So they have this system where you, you know, push the little button and they go down, and then they have the strap that you pull. And I actually had to like basically lean all the way into the vehicle, feet off the ground, to grab the strap to pull it back. Now, it wasn't difficult. I was able to do it, but it just, it, you know, it's not convenient for somebody my size. The second row seats, like, it has a really nifty feature where you, you know, it tilts and slides so that you can leave a car seat in the second row, while you then put somebody in the third row. But, you know, it moves forward really easily. It does the tilt and slide super easy. But when you're trying to get it back into place, I was just like I felt like Sisyphus trying to push, you know, a boulder up a mountain. And it just, it was not easy. I certainly couldn't have done it one-handed. And if there was a car seat in there, like, no way. So, so selling points, one of the women was telling me you can put three car seats across the back. That's huge.
That is,
you know,
that is
for
huge.
Somebody who has twins or has, you know, a few children under, you know, a certain age. And so that's a huge selling point. I liked the simplicity of the interior. I didn't love it, but I liked it. And my sister, who's a designer, actually, like, she got in the car and she was like, ooh, she loved it. So, you know, it appealed to her. And you know, I had a friend in the back seat, and he was just like, this is really cool. And he kept pushing all the buttons. And so, I mean, there was a lot of favorable feedback from the women that I talked to and the people that I had in the car. But I didn't love it. Hmm. I want to love it. I mean, you saw, if you haven't seen the commercial yet, you know, do Volkswagen Birds and Bees search on YouTube. You see that commercial, I'm like, you can't help but say, oh my gosh, that's so hilarious. I want to love this vehicle, but I don't.
Yeah. Well, I guess the reason I keep talking about it is it's such a big vehicle for VW.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow, is it huge. I mean, their cars aren't selling that well. Dieselgate has killed their sales. They have a three-row SUV, which is exactly what the marketplace has been demanding. It's a huge vehicle for them, and I just can't state that enough. And so And unlike you, I'd love to see VW get back to where it was. It's a great company. They have a lot of fun driving cars. But it's a great company. And
yeah.
I just think that the Atlas needs to take off. And I was on Chad Kirschner's Future Motoring podcast yesterday. And I think the time is now for the Amarok, too, to bring a truck to the marketplace. I mean, it just makes a lot of sense. And so I'm excited to see them move this direction. And I hope that the Atlas sells as well as they need to give them an extra push from the corporate side to get to that point. But so anyways, I'm going to drive tomorrow. So here's the story there, dear podcasters, is that both Jill and I are going to drive cars next week. We have to go drive some different cars. I'm doing a favor for a site, and Jill's doing Toyota Camry drive. And we will be back on Friday, not Thursday. We'll be back on Friday for another podcast. We'll wrap up. Maybe we'll talk about these cars a little bit, but more truck news. Yes, truck news. So that's it for today's episode of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. Make sure you follow us on Facebook on Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. Check out the website at pickuptrucktalk.com. Send me an email, thoughts, comments, concerns, hate mail, as at Tim at pickuptrucktalk.com. Follow us on Twitter, T.I. Estradol and Jason Manillo. And I'll have that.
Jill Simonello. Jill Simonello.
Jill Simonello. I'm sorry, the full name. 39.3 miles. I will have that information on the show notes. Check us out, follow us, tweet us any questions, and we'll see you down the road.